Welcome back to Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. We've got 2 days done in the story of Ruth saying those famous words, I'll go where you go. And nobody asked her for this oath. And we've talked about the structure of it, the legal weight of it, and the amazing fact that she chose the person, not the prospects.
Yeah, segment two, we talked about exit ramps, how real commitments don't get made just in ceremonies. They get made at the moment. Everything is pointing in the wrong direction toward the exit ramp. And most of us have left a door cracked that we could walk off into that exit ramp.
Yeah, so today we're going to bring the whole thing home because everything we've talked about has been building toward the same place.
Ruth was pointing at something, and we're going to tell you what. There's a verse in the passage that almost nobody talks about. It's verse 18. After Ruth makes an oath, after she refuses every argument Naomi said to this point, the text says, when Naomi saw that she was just determined to go with her, she said no more to her.
Yep, she said no more.
Sit in that silence for a second. Naomi spent four verses building a really impeccable case.
Well, four verses is a lot in a four-chapter book.
Ruth's departure, right?
Like, yeah.
She had the legal brief, the empty ledger, theological argument. I have nothing. I'm empty. The Lord has gone against me. She's talking about the curse that's on her. And Ruth didn't engage the argument. She didn't debate. She just said, I'm not going, and kept walking.
Yeah, what does it feel like when someone refuses to accept your worst verdict about yourself?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question because I think we all struggle with that. Like if they only knew and only could see like all of our dirty laundry, then they would think something of us, right? There's a psychologist named Kurt Thompson. He writes about shame and he says that the opposite of shame is not pride. It's being known and not abandoned. I really like that thought.
Mm-hmm.
Shame says if you saw the full picture, you would leave. The antidote is someone who has seen the full picture and is still standing there.
Ruth has seen the full picture. She's actually been part of the picture. And Naomi's made sure of that. And Ruth is still walking beside her.
That silence is the first crack, I think. And Naomi is later in that it says that she's bitter. Mara is what she says for people to call her.
Yeah.
And Naomi's bitterness, it's not a resolution. It's not an answered prayer. It's not a visible sign from God. Just a woman. What Ruth does is she's just a woman who refused to leave. And something in Naomi under all that bitterness, I think, sees it and hears it.
Yeah. And then they arrive in Bethlehem. So they keep on walking. They get back to Bethlehem. The whole city is stirred. The Hebrew word is hum. It's an uproar. The women ask, is this Naomi? Meaning, you have changed so much, we almost didn't recognize you.
Yeah, all the ladies, they be gossiping.
Yeah, for sure.
All the single ladies be gossiping, right?
All the gossip ladies, that's what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, and Naomi's answer is one of the most brutally honest things said about suffering in the entire Old Testament. Don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant. Call me Mara, bitter. I went away full. The Lord has brought me back empty.
Yeah, she doesn't say life has been hard. She pins it directly on God, and she names the Lord. She calls him Shaddai, the Almighty. She makes God the subject of her grief.
Which sounds like a loss of faith, but I don't actually think it is. Here's the theological truth under it. You cannot be angry at someone you don't believe exists. You cannot grieve this specifically, the absence of blessing from a God you've given up on.
So the bitterness is evidence of belief? The accusation is a prayer? She's still talking to him? That's interesting.
Yeah. And then the narrator does something that should stop us in our tracks. In the same breath that he says Naomi calls herself empty, it's the same verse, the narrator adds, almost as an aside. And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Remember, they were in a famine, and now there's a harvest.
Yeah, the fields are full. There's bread in Bethlehem again.
Naomi is naming herself Mara, empty, bitter, abandoned, and the harvest has already started. She doesn't know it yet. She doesn't know a man named Boaz exists. She's doing her theology with the last year's data.
And God's not waiting for her to update her theology before he acts. The harvest started before she got there.
Yeah. And here's where we need to go before we close, because if we leave Ruth as a story about loyalty and commitment, I think we've missed the deepest thing of the whole book's doing.
Now, Ruth ends up in the genealogy of Jesus. I love that. Matthew 1:5. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, she's listed by name. Ruth, the Moabite, the outsider, the woman from the wrong nation, the wrong bloodline, the wrong history, she named in the line of the Messiah.
Yeah, Matthew is making an argument, and he's saying this is how God has always worked. The outsider shows up, the one with no grounds for inclusion volunteers anyway. The one through, I think you said Rahab, that would be another example of that. Mm-hmm. The one through whom everything moves is the one the world had no category for. She had no people.
No. And think about what Ruth actually did. She looked at a woman who had nothing, zero, who called herself empty, who made the full case for her own abandonment. And she said, your people are my people. Your God is my God. I am not leaving you.
That's a picture, an earthly shadow, if you will, of a heavenly reality that arrived thousands of years later.
Yeah, because Jesus looked at us empty and bitter, making the case for our own condemnation, and said something greater than Ruth said. Not just where you go, I will go, but where you have already gone, into the ruin, into the grave, into the silence, I will follow you there, and I will not stay there.
Yeah, Romans 5:8. There's these words that carry a whole lot of weight. While we were still. While we were still sinners, not after we cleaned up, not after we stopped calling ourselves Mara and being bitter, while we were still building the case, God moved.
Yeah, Ruth's commitment was breathtaking, but it's a shadow. The real thing is Christ's commitment to us, made not when we were worthy and not when we'd cleaned up our theology, but precisely when we were calling ourselves empty, abandoned, and done.
He was calling us that too. Why?
Oh, right. Yeah. We might not have been calling.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what makes the gospel different from every other account of how you get right with God. In every other system, you bring something. You earn your way in. You improve your standing. You make yourself worth the commitment.
Now, the gospel says he made the commitment first. Before you had anything to bring, the oath was sworn in your direction before you even knew that you needed it.
Here's the other piece, because some of us aren't wondering if God committed to us at the beginning. We're wondering if the commitment still holds now. And everything we've done or left or undone after the faithlessness and the cracked doors and the bitter seasons, we accused him.
Yeah, Paul writes to Timothy, and this is likely an early church hymn he's quoting, something the church already knew and sang. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself.
Yeah, but right above that thing, there's a structure in this thing, and the first three are really symmetrical, and it kind of walks through. If you die with Christ, you will live with Christ, and it's all these kind of movements of the text, and you think if you deny him, he will deny you.
Yeah.
And so when it says, if you are faithless,
he remains faithful. He doesn't become faithless.
Yeah. And you're like, what? What? Yeah. That's because it's part of his nature. He cannot deny himself. That's not a sentiment. It's like a part of his being. His faithfulness is not a decision he makes fresh every morning. Like, today I shall be faithful. I don't know why God has that voice.
He does not have that voice.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you said, a while ago. Human fickleness cannot produce divine fickleness. Like, we're not that powerful.
No, no, no. He cannot unsay the oath. He cannot walk away from the person he has called his own. Not because it would be hard. Not because it feels like there's an exorant, but because it would require him to become something that he is not. It is in his very nature that he is faithful, even when we're faithless.
Yeah, his faithfulness is not a mirror of ours. It's a foundation beneath ours. And so while Naomi runs out of reasons to be abandoned, Ruth was still there.
You may have run out of arguments. Maybe you've been faithless. Maybe you've cracked the door and all of a sudden you see, even in all of your ruin, even in all of your stuff, even in all of your sin, even in all of that stuff, and going, man, God, where are you in all of this? You're faithless to him. And you crack the door and what will you see? You will see he's still there. Not because you earned it, because he cannot deny himself. That's the beauty of that passage.
Yeah, so here's where we've been this week. Ruth makes an oath, and there's the structure, the legal weight, and there's a stunning fact that nobody asked for her to make this oath, but she chose the person and not the prospects.
Two, there's the exit ramp. Real commitment doesn't get made in ceremonies. They get made when everything is pointing in the wrong direction, and there's a very easy exit ramp that you're halfway down, and it's one step over, and you're through that thing.
Yeah, and then Ruth was pointing at something. 1,000 years before Bethlehem, an outsider woman walked toward a broken woman on a dusty road and said, I know you're empty. I know there's nothing here, but I'm staying anyway.
And that's what the cross says to you and to I know. I know who you are. All of your dirty laundry, all of your junk, all of your stuff. I know who you are. And I love you anyway. While you were yet sinners, Christ died for you. And I'm staying here. He saw that we were empty. He saw that we were bitter. He saw that we were sinful. And he made a covenant right there in that moment on the cross where the nails went into his hands, where he took his last breath. And he said, it is finished. Not after we were cleaned up, not after all the bitterness and the pain was gone, when we were empty, Christ came for us.
All the way. No exit ramp.
Yeah. And he's not leaving. It's outside of his nature. Yeah. That's good news you can use. That should be really hopeful good news. Doesn't matter where you've been, what's been done to you, where you've gone. None of that matters because God, if you will crack that door, he is right there for you.
Thanks for tuning in with us. If you've got questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can email those to office@evangelup.org. If you'd like to catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform or go to our website, evangelup.org.